this morning, which is Kuhn versus Goodloe.
Salem?
Yes, good morning, Your Honor. My name is Maurice Salem. I represent the plaintiff appellant in this case, Kuhn. Your Honors, in the complaint, we allege that the appellant Kuhn was arrested because he received a certificate of occupancy for his house and he did not give a bribe to the city inspector, and that would be the appellee Goodloe. Your Honors, the initial justification for the arrest was that he did not have a certificate of occupancy. The arrest warrant, Your Honors, clearly states that there's only one charge, and that was for, quote, no occupancy permit. That's shown on the appendix before you on page 32, the Exhibit E. Now, a month after the arrest, Your Honors, Goodloe and the arresting officer realized there was no probable cause to arrest Kuhn for not having a certificate of occupancy. So a new charge was brought, and that was a charge for disorderly conduct. Now, Your Honors, notwithstanding...
Mr. Kuhn paid the fine for that disorderly conduct. So doesn't arguing now that there was no probable cause to arrest for the disorderly conduct imply that that was an invalid conviction?
No, that's not the argument we're making, Your Honor. We agree that, and all the people who attended the criminal court proceeding, which is the Goodloe, the Kuhn, as well as the arresting officers, they all testified in the deposition that the only charge at the criminal proceeding was disorderly conduct. And we concede that Kuhn paid a fine for disorderly conduct.
Is there a judgment issued?
Your Honor, there's absolutely no record of the criminal court proceeding in the city court. None whatsoever, not in the state or anywhere. And the bailiff in that court proceeding was the arresting officer as well as the witness who was Goodloe. Your Honors, here's the thing.
Wait a minute, Goodloe or the officer?
Goodloe is the inspector.
Yeah.
The arresting officer, Meldrow, was the bailiff in that city court. He has access to all the city court records. And Your Honors, subsequently, there's absolutely no record of this criminal court proceeding. But, Your Honors, in the deposition, everyone testified that not having a certificate of occupancy charge was never brought up in the criminal court proceeding. That's why it is our contention. The Hick versus Humphrey case doesn't apply because the plaintiff did not plead guilty or pay a fine for not having a certificate of occupancy. Everyone agrees to that, Your Honor. There's no dispute on that. Now, what the district court used to dismiss this case was the Holmes case. The Holmes case says that where there are multiple charges at the time of the arrest, if there's probable cause for one of those charges, then you can't have a Section 1983 claim, even though the other charges did not have probable cause. The Holmes case, Your Honors, cannot apply here, and the reason is because there was only one charge at the time of the arrest, and if you look at the appendix at page 33, which is Exhibit E, the arresting citation there says there's only one charge, and that was for not having a certificate of occupancy. Now, Your Honor, there's another point to be made here, and if you look throughout the whole record, you'll see that Goodloe and the arresting officer testified that the arrest was for disorderly conduct and not for not having a certificate of occupancy. But again, Your Honors, if you look at this, the arresting citation, it clearly says that he was arrested for not having a certificate of occupancy, and this, Your Honors, should completely...
Now, Goodloe wasn't the police officer who did the arrest, so, I mean, what can you point to in the record that would make him liable for the arrest?
Well, Your Honors, we made that argument in a motion because he was the...
What's the evidence in the record that would make him liable?
He brought the arresting officer with him in his car, and they allege they passed by the plaintiff's home accidentally. But he brought the arresting officer, who was his childhood friend, with him in the car to arrest, and he directed the arrest of the plaintiff. And Your Honor,
what evidence is there that Goodloe directed the arrest? Your client, when he was asked about that, said he didn't know.
Your Honor, well, the circumstantial evidence. The reason is because the arresting officer had absolutely no way of knowing about the certificate of occupancy. He has never been in the house. He has nothing to know about it. And yet the arresting officer in his own handwriting wrote in the citation that he's arresting my client for not having a certificate of occupancy. But, Your Honor, we dealt with this on a motion.
Police officers all the time have a witness that's at the scene that may tell them something, one thing or another, and then they act on it and arrest. It may turn out that what the witness says is incorrect. It happens all the time. So I just can't – I'm having difficulty understanding why Goodloe is liable. I mean, I understand that, you know, and that he directed, he made the officer made no independent judgment.
Your Honors, that's why initial complaint, we had both Goodloe and the and Meldrow, the arresting officer. The district court dismissed the arresting officer because he had probable cause based on what the inspector told him about the certificate of occupancy. So, technically, Your Honors, and I didn't deal with this on the brief here, but we dealt it with it on a separate motion, the motion, the 12B6 motion, and if you review that, you'll see that the argument I made that the inspector, who had the power to arrest, he was the city government official, and he directed Meldrew to make the arrest based on a certificate of occupancy, which clearly the citation said so. So that's the connection, Your Honor. That's why the inspector is liable, Your Honor, and he did not have probable cause.
Can I ask you a question about that, yes. Mr. Salem? I see a citation that says a violation of the certificate of occupancy requirements show up in court on thus and such a day. It looks to me a lot like a parking ticket. I mean, is that the kind of thing that somebody can be taken into custody for?
Apart
from this case, because we also have the incident report that says, in essence, disorderly conduct was the problem. And I'm wondering if the difference between just a citation to show up and effectively pay a parking fine or a certificate of occupancy fine is different from disorderly conduct, which is the kind of thing people get arrested for.
Your Honor, I completely agree with you. But in this case, what the officer did is handcuffed, manhandled the plaintiff, and locked him up in jail.
Let me try again.
Yes.
Is there legal authority to arrest a person for violation of section, 151.23?
There isn't, Your Honor. You're absolutely right. There is no legal authority for that. But the Fourth Amendment says that search and seizure is prohibited without probable cause. The certificate of occupancy isn't probable cause to arrest them and seize them.
Right.
So I agree. No agreement with you, Your Honor. There's no legal basis. But the government...
But disorderly conduct does provide a basis.
I'm sorry.
Right? Disorderly conduct does provide
it, it
a
does,
basis.
It does, Your Honor. It does. And disorderly conduct came up later. If disorderly conduct was the basis of the arrest, which the Holmes case requires, Your Honor, it would be on the citation. There would be some proof of it. I presented overwhelming evidence in the record of the circumstances of how Goodloe and the arresting officer got to the house, of witnesses who submitted affidavits. There was no disorderly conduct. But okay, fine. We will accept that the plaintiff paid fines for disorderly conduct and pleaded guilty with it. But the fact is, the arrest citation, overwhelming evidence, shows there was only one charge at the time of the arrest. Whether or not that's a legal charge or not, that's another issue. And that one charge was for not having a certificate of occupancy. We have written documents that shows it. We have overwhelming circumstantial evidence that shows it. So that, Your Honor, knocks out the Holmes case. And I strongly believe that the lower court made a mistake in this case. I strongly urge this court to remand it. And I'd like to reserve 1 minute rebuttal, if I may. I only have 9 minutes. Thank you, Your Honor. Unless there's any other questions.
Mr. Ruber.
May it please the Court, Patrick J. Ruber, appearing on behalf of Thaddeus Goodloe.
It's important to remember that Officer Muldrow was originally sued in this lawsuit, and he was dismissed pursuant to Rule 12b-6 on November 14, 2008, and then a case was terminated as to him on November 14, 2008. Mr. Kuhn did not elect to appeal that order, and it is not part of this appeal. And the reason I mention this is very simple. After Officer Muldrow exited the case, Mr. Kuhn and his attorney had to cobble together some type of theory to keep the case going against Thaddeus Goodloe, a building inspector, whom, by the way, does not have the power to make arrests. He is not a sworn police officer. If Mr. Salem has any authority along those lines, he has not presented it in this case, and he has not argued that point in this case. And I think you must realize there's a dilemma here for Mr. Kuhn. To keep his case alive, he had to come up with this theory that he was arrested pursuant to one theory, but then apparently found guilty on pursuant to a subsequent theory, and he claims that somehow defeats our assertion of Heck versus Humphrey, and he could not be more wrong. Judge Zagel correctly found that probable cause, if it exists, for any offense is sufficient to sustain an arrest. And this conviction, be it for not having a occupancy certificate or for disorderly conduct, acts as an absolute bar to his Section 1983 claim.
Can this disorderly, or can the certificate of occupancy violation support an arrest?
I believe it can.
Based on what?
I believe I haven't looked at the ordinance, but I know there are similar ordinances, Judge, that for example, zoning violation ordinances typically will have, if you violate this ordinance and are found to violate, you could be, held in prison for 6 months or county jail for 6 months. I know other municipalities have those provisions in their zoning and building codes. Whether this one does, I honestly don't know. This issue didn't come up below, but I would point out that Mr. Kuhn himself admitted under oath that he was arrested for not having an occupancy permit and convicted of that crime. That's his unequivocal deposition testimony. Now, we go to summary judgment, and all of a sudden, he's confronted with that admission. So what do? They create this fiction of, they arrested him initially for not having an occupancy permit, and then they had him convicted of disorderly conduct. Well, according to Mr. Kuhn, I guess, at least on appeal and in response to summary judgment, he's now convicted of disorderly conduct, and he didn't really challenge it because he was afraid of being homered in a small-town municipal court. That is essentially the explanation. But the record shows one thing, and this is what pervades the entire record. Mr. Kuhn admits that he was arrested for something, and he admits that he was convicted of something. And that something, whatever it is, and it depends on which day you catch him, whatever that something was, resulted in a conviction.
No record of the conviction, whatever it was for.
There isn't. We could not find it at the recordings from the municipal court. But, and if in fact he was convicted, Judge.
Whatever it was, he pled guilty to.
He was found guilty, according to him.
Found guilty or pled guilty?
I believe he said found guilty, is what he said at his deposition. But, again, whatever it was, it precludes this Section 1983 claim, and it also acts to stop him from maintaining any type of state law claim for false arrest. I think that what they're trying to do is try to keep this case alive against an individual who had absolutely nothing to do with the arrest, and hence we have this elaborate theory, and that's all it is a theory. What you heard, Mr. For example, he said that my client and Officer Muldrow are childhood friends. I think Thaddeus Goodloe just retired. I think he's 68 or 69. Officer Muldrow, I believe, is 35, so I think there's a generational problem here as far as they're being childhood friends. But this is just an example. They're trying to throw something up against the wall and hope it will stick. And there's just nothing here with respect to any suggestion of collusion. You heard Mr. Salem say that this arrest occurred because it was part of a bribery scheme. Well, if there are any facts to support that contention in the record, they've escaped my notice. So I think that this is a very simple case. Mr. Kuhn has basically made admissions on the record, which require Judge Zagel to find that Heck bars a Section 1983 claim. But even if the court somehow finds there's an issue of fact with respect to whether Heck preclusion applies, I think you'll read this case the way it was litigated, at least from, I think, the plaintiff's side, because of the various theories that have been thrown around. It presents a Gordian knot, so to speak. And I think the best way to deal with a Gordian knot is how Alexander the Great did with it. Just take out your collective sabers and cut through that knot. Because the record is devoid of any evidence which in any way remotely suggests that Mr. Goodloe arrested this gentleman. And what is that evidence? It's Mr. Kuhn's own testimony. He not only says Mr. Goodloe didn't arrest him, he says he didn't even encourage Officer Muldrow to make the arrest. He just stood there, according to Mr. Kuhn. And summary judgment can be affirmed on any basis in the record, and we've established that he had no involvement. And non-involvement in a Section 1983 claim is basically a defense we've asserted, and the case law shows that personal participation in the alleged violation is a predicate for liability, and that's not here. We also asserted qualified immunity as a defense, and we raised that on summary judgment, and that was not even responded to. The only response was, Mr. Goodloe was trying to solicit a bribe, he gets no qualified immunity. That was their response. But if you look at the facts that were mustered on summary judgment, they show that Mr. Kuhn is unable to establish the first prong of qualified immunity, which is, has the plaintiff alleged and established a possible constitutional violation? And he has it with respect to Mr. Goodloe. And secondly, even if he has somehow met that burden with respect to the first prong, the second prong, would a reasonable official who's standing next to a police officer intervene in an arrest and somehow try to stop it when he has no arrest power, no weapon, or anything like that? Of course not. So he's entitled to qualified immunity with respect to whether there's a clearly established violation. So I think that, you know, Judge Zagel's decision should be affirmed. It is based on existing law, and what it amounts to is Mr. Kuhn is trying to run away from his own sworn deposition testimony. And for the reasons I've stated above, and unless there are any other questions, I ask that the court affirm Judge Zagel's ruling in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
There's absolutely no way for the arresting officer to know anything about the certificate of occupancy which he wrote in his handwriting on the arrest warrant. That's how Goodloe is involved. And Goodloe is a government agent acting under the color of the law. Judge Hamilton, you're right. The CO, you can't be arrested for it, but where people get arrested on the basis of the CO is coupled with a contempt of court. In other words, if the individual continues to live in a house without a CO.
That wasn't happening here.
Excuse me?
That wasn't happening here, was it?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So what I'm trying to explain is your question to counsel was, and counsel didn't know whether you could be arrested for a CO. You're typically arrested for not listening to the court. And contempt of court is what you get arrested for, but not the CO. That's a fact, Your Honor. I can present that to you if you want to in the future. Now, with respect to my client paying a fine, in the deposition, all he said is he paid the fine to the judge. And in the deposition, everyone said the only charge at the criminal court proceeding was disorderly conduct. Everyone agrees with that. The arresting officer, Goodloe, and the plaintiff. So, therefore, my client could have only paid a fine for disorderly conduct and not the other point. And the other point I want to make, which I didn't develop, the bailiff was the arresting officer, the witness was the CEO, and it was a small court, and there is absolutely no tape, no file, absolutely no record in the court of this conviction. And also, with respect to the childhood friend, I meant that Goodloe knew Muldrow when he was a child. He was friends with him when he was a child. Unless there's any other questions, that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Both counsel, the case is taken under advisement.